have come out of the deepest financial crisis, and we're now 9 years out of that crisis. Now the world is reverting to the old order. The U.S. is leading the cyclical recovery. Industrial countries are doing better than emerging markets.
There's a little bit of disingenuity out there. We may raise taxes, but we are also going to eliminate private health insurance premiums for individuals and for business.
You know, one of the questions that you ask yourself is, who's left? I think in the short term, there's going to be a lot of, like, head scratching in terms of who's heading up what part of their business.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is Tuesday, January 26th, 2016, 5:09. Welcome to the program this morning. I wish I had better news to tell you about overseas markets today and what may be ahead here in the United States. It is Apple Day today. Apple is reporting earnings after the bell, and that is driving at least some of the concern on Wall Street and the foreign markets this morning. But the bigger issue is oil. Oil is trading again below $30 in a barrel at now about 29, and now it's above 30, 37, but all night long it had been below $30 at 29.40 at one point. It is lower today. That's driving the Asian markets lower today by about 479 points in China. In Japan, the Nikkei off 402 points. It's all pointing toward a lower open on Wall Street later today. The Dow off 28 points. The Dow futures off 28 points. The S&P futures are off 2 points this morning. Other volatility in the markets, the financial markets includes the dollar against the yen. Also overnight, we're learning what we might see later today from Apple. They expect to post strong earnings, but all of the analysts are saying that the iPhone sales of the iPhone are flat or have fallen for the first time ever. And believe it or not, the reasoning is they say everyone who can afford an iPhone and wants one has already bought one. And so the future of Apple is really in question today. They are analysts and investors are all looking for the next big thing from Apple. And so far, they don't see it. Earnings after the bell today. In eastern part of the United States, they're still digging out from the snow, and lots of offices are closed today. Some federal offices, city offices, lots of things as they try to get back to normal from the big blizzard. And the bean counters have counted actually the snow and the cost of that, in addition to all of the flights canceled and the lost productivity at work. One of the economists I saw this morning actually put a per inch cost on this, $1.8 million per inch, according to them. In the billions, it's going to be billions with a B for everybody. The city or the District of Columbia has actually asked FEMA for help because they need help paying for it. And that brings us to our first guest on the opening bell this morning, the business of snow, as it were. Joining us this morning is Jacqueline Howard of the Huffington Post. Jacqueline, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
You know, you have been writing about a much better way to deal with winter messes and de-icing and snow removal. Tell us about it.
Yeah, exactly. So we do have concrete that's able to de-ice itself. And basically how this works is the concrete is just like any other standard concrete mixture, but about 20% of this mixture is made of steel shavings and carbon particles, which, you know, then are capable or they're then able to allow the concrete to conduct electricity, which then allows it to generate heat and melt away ice and snow on its own. So this is a new approach to clearing the roads and dealing with snow. And right now it's being tested at the University of Nebraska. And if, you know, we are able to really roll this out, it would be groundbreaking for cities across the country.
Well, let's talk about the cost of this. Is it cheaper than pouring salt? And in some cases, I think, what is it, cabbage juice or beet juice on the roads? Is it going to be cheaper than that?
Right. So the whole idea is that it could potentially be cheaper if you take into consideration, you know, not just the salt and chemicals that we would use to, you know, pour out over the roads, but if you also take into consideration, you know, the labor and as well as the machinery that we use. So basically, a cubic yard of this concrete costs $300 right now, and that is more expensive than the approximately $120 per cubic yard of regular concrete. But the whole idea is that on a grander scale, you know, this cost per cubic yard could go down. And again, the whole hope is that it would save us lots of money, at least for cities, not individually, if, you know, if we were to use this on our own driveways, but on a grander scale, maybe it could, you know, save money for a city to use.
People that are testing this out are going to try this on the FAA first, apparently, with the runways, right?
Right, exactly. So, you know, right now there is the whole option to test with the FAA. And actually, surprisingly, the FAA has an idea to, instead of use this on runways, they would use it instead on tarmacs. And that can help with loading and unloading luggage and trash and fuel, which surprisingly does lead to delays for weather-related travel. So, yes, if this is a successful test, we could see this material in a major U.S. airport and even more from there. Additionally...
Mm-hmm. No, I was just going to say, we have to go here, but I want to get you one final thought on this. In the long run, there has to be a mindset change, doesn't there, when it comes to some of this stuff? Because right now there are contractors and construction companies and salt companies who lobby the government for these contracts every year. That thinking has to change, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. And, you know, especially as the technology advances, and if we, you know, do see more of this, yes, it would be an interesting conversation to have, and, you know, it could drastically change, like you said, how we kind of approach and think about work that's being done.
Jacqueline Howard of the Huffington Post, good of you to get up with us this morning on the opening bell, and folks can read more of your stuff at theatlantic.com. We're going to link to the story that you've done on this as well, and at Huffington Post, and you're at Jack E. Howard, J-A-C-Q-E Howard on Twitter. On the opening bell this morning. Again, the estimate for the big snowstorm out east is going to be in the billions of dollars, maybe $1 million per inch, according to one economist.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, global stocks fell sharply Tuesday as Chinese markets plunged and oil prices fell back below $30 a barrel. Investors sold equities in Europe and Asia in favor of safety nets like the yen, gold, and U.S. treasuries after the Shanghai Composite plummeted 6.5%. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 208 points to 15,885. The Standard & Poor's 500 shed 30 points. The Nasdaq lost 73. Stock futures point to an opening loss for the Dow's and the S&P. Shares in Twitter continued to slide after the company said four executives, including its head of engineering, would be leaving the company. The stock lost 82 cents to 17.02. Twitter is down 57% in the last year. Want to see what $5 million looks like? Just watch Super Bowl 50. That's the price that advertisers are paying for a 30-second spot inside the big game. That's $166,666 per second of network airtime. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 521. As you heard Jim mention there, the problems at Twitter continue this morning, and there are some reports out that maybe some hires will be announced today. They are already being rumored about, so we're not going to talk about the rumors of them, but there could be at least two new hires today after four of Twitter's top execs left the company en masse all at the same time. The stock stinks. Investors want an explanation longer than 140 characters, so what is next for Twitter? The person who broke this story, the reporter who broke this story, is Kurt Wagner. He's with Recode.com, online internet and technology blog that covers all of this. And he says that the growth could fall even further. A lot of people are scratching their heads. Kurt is with us this morning from California. Kurt, so tell us, is this what some people are calling this, a bombshell, a big explosion for Twitter?
Well, it's a little unclear still, and really it depends on, you know, who you end up talking to, right? CEO Jack Dorsey very clearly said that all of these executives left on their own accord, right? And at least one of them Katie Stanton, who's the head of media, she wrote a post on her own and said that she resigned. So they're very much, you know, from the company standpoint, they're playing this off as though everyone has chosen to leave and was not fired. I don't know if that actually looks better for Twitter or not, right? I mean, these are obviously really important people, high up, been there a long time. The fact that they all chose to leave at the same time is certainly unsettling, I would imagine, for Twitter investors. But we don't fully know yet if this is a strategic thing orchestrated by Dorsey, or if, you know, people were just ready to go and they decided to do it all at once.
Well, the investors, certainly stock is down, has been trading down, and people have been describing this as a bombshell, as explosive news. Is it somewhere in the middle, or is this a bombshell for Twitter?
No, I think this is a bombshell. I think this is a big deal. When you look at the fact that they, I mean, the issues at Twitter, we've chronicled them closely. It really comes down to user growth, and that ultimately stems from the product, right? The head of product and the head of engineering, the two guys essentially responsible for, you know, fixing the Twitter app and getting more people to use the service, they are both gone. And so what that does is it really just sets everything back, right? I mean, those are not easy roles to fill. And I think that they could have a tough time actually hiring people from the outside, because Twitter certainly doesn't look like a place that you'd want to go work right now. And so I think what this does is it delays everything that they want to be doing. And right now they don't really have the luxury of time to actually put stuff on the back burner. You know, people are expecting them to turn this around pretty quickly.
As I read your reporting on this, most of these people, if not all of these people, were not Jack Dorsey's people. They're not part of his team. Do you think that had anything to do with this? He wants people in place that are handpicked?
I think absolutely. I think when you, especially someone like Jack, who really does understand the product, right? I mean, he's the co-founder of Twitter. He invented Twitter. And so when you have someone like that who really has strong feelings about where he wants the product to go, I think it makes it all the more important that he has the people in place that he feels comfortable with. My guess is that somewhere in the last 6 months, since he kind of started taking over the company again, they realized that either, you know, it wasn't a fit for the executives, they didn't want to work for Jack, or Jack realized it wasn't fit. Maybe it's a combination of the two, but I really do think that, you know, him having control over who's running the product is more important than it would be for other CEOs, given you know, how close he's followed the product all these years.
And he's been openly critical too of this production team, right?
He has, not, you know, so much calling people out by name, but I remember on his first earnings call, I want to say it was back in July or maybe June. He got on the call and basically said, we're unhappy with the progress we've made and it's unacceptable and we're going to change it. And I thought that was a pretty strong thing to say, especially on that first call. And it really, you know, in my opinion, put me on alert to the fact that, okay, he's paying close attention to the product team. And lo and behold, there were some structural changes around the organization a few months later. And now, of course, some of the top dogs there are departing. So I think that he has had a particular vision for where he wants product to go. And this aligns with that vision.
And you've asked in your story one of the questions that I'm going to ask next, and that is, what comes next?
I know. What does come next? I talked briefly about the need to find replacements for these folks who are leaving. And I think that has to be a top priority, right? You can't, given the stock, given the pressure that they're feeling from Wall Street, I mean, you can't go 6 months without a head of product, a head of engineering, a head of media. These are important roles. So I think that priorities number 1 through 10 right now need to be finding replacements and long-term replacements too, because for those who don't follow the company super closely, I mean, the head of product role at Twitter has now gone through, I believe, 4 different people in the last, you know, year and a half or 2 years. That is a lot of turnover for an important role within a company like this. So I think they need to find replacements, and they need to make sure that those replacements are going to be around for the long haul, because they can't really afford to continue to start over the way that they've been doing the last couple of years.
We've seen how Wall Street has reacted to this, but you and I and everybody else who's a Twitter user, it hasn't been noticeable, or has it, or will it?
I think that the general user probably doesn't care a whole lot who's running Twitter, right? I mean, they want to see that make sure that the product works. They want to see the features they want to see, but they're maybe not paying close attention to, you know, what the org chart looks like inside the company. That being said, it doesn't make it any less important, right? Because those people who are running the company and who are making those decisions are ultimately impacting the product that is in the hands of 300 plus million people. So I don't know if the general Twitter public necessarily pays close attention to all of this drama. At the same time, I think it's incredibly important to what we ultimately end up having on our phones. But then also, of course, if you are a Twitter investor, I mean, this is the most important news of the year so far.
As you do this reporting and this story breaks, I can't help but think to last week when we saw that, if you want to call it a trial balloon or some fake news, that maybe Fox News Corp may have been interested in buying Twitter. Mm-hmm. Do you think that was a trial balloon, or did that have anything at all to do with any of this?
You know, it's really hard to tell. There was speculation that rumor was, you know, started somewhere by folks who were shorting the stock and they wanted to, you know, see a little boost and get out while they could. I think what we took away from that is that there is a lot of interest around that idea. So as far as I know, that particular rumor has no legs to it. That being said, you saw the fact that as soon as there was the idea of Twitter being acquired, the stock jumped dramatically and people, you know, were all over the idea. So I think it's important to note that investors, the thought of Twitter getting acquired, like that sounds kind of nice to a lot of investors who have been frustrated with the company in the past. So I don't think those are the last rumors of that kind that you're going to start hearing. And the last thing is that there's a lot of a potential for someone to come in, an activist shareholder, to come in, buy a big chunk of the company and really start making a lot of noise and kind of apply pressure in that way. And there's people who think that that's a possibility too. So this company is certainly at a point right now where there's a lot of speculation around what's going to happen, and some of it doesn't look so great for Twitter.
Kurt Wagner is a reporter at Recode.net. You can find him at KurtWagner8 on Twitter. He's running a poll this morning. Twitter's announced it might stop advertisements on feeds of VIPs. So Kurt is running a poll on his feed this morning. Go vote on that and follow his reporting. Again, Recode and Kurt broke this story about Twitter's exodus over the weekend. This is the opening bell on WGN. Next in the news, it's been a violent night in Chicago. That's just ahead. Stay with us.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:39. Welcome back to the program. It's a big earnings day today on the calendar. Federal Reserve's Federal Open Market Committee is starting a two-day meeting today. You can bet the discussion will include whether or not it was right for them to raise interest rates in their last meeting. We'll see earnings today from 3M, Apple, AT&T, International Speedway, Procter & Gamble, Sprint, UMB Financial, Apple, the big one after the bell later on today. Well, if you have a blog, if you're a company that has a blog or some sort of a small business owner that tries to market itself online with some sort of content, you know that it's an ongoing everyday job. Many people, however, think spending money for it is not an option, at least spending a lot of money for it is not an option. And so people are trying to find quick ways, easy ways to make content promotion feel like it's affordable and updated on a regular basis. Sujan Patel is with us. He's the VP of Marketing at WhenIWork.com. And Sujan joins us this morning via phone. Sujan, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, well, you've written something really nice on Entrepreneur.com, and that is, you know, how we can keep this content promotion that we do as businesses, as hosts of shows, fresh and easy. It's not an easy job, is it?
Definitely not easy, and I think it's one of the most forgotten things about content marketing in general. It's the marketing part, it's the promotion.
And for a lot of people, it's an afterthought, isn't it? For some businesses, do you not think they're taking it seriously?
I think they're taking it seriously, but it's a hard concept to grasp because it's one of those things that you have to get out there. You publish something amazing. You have to go out there in people's faces and actually actively promote the piece of content. And I think people are so quick to essentially hit the publish button and they put a lot of work into that, but not they don't plan well enough for the after part, right? The kind of the thing that gets better results, or the thing that gets you the actual results.
What is that? So tell us what that is.
Yeah, so ultimately what I'm referring to is called content promotion. And it's essentially going out there. You can promote content hundreds of different ways, but essentially the first part of, and the most important part, is actually to create a plan or time and budget for the promotion. So, you know, simply creating the content and hitting the publish button is not enough. Not these days with businesses doubling, tripling down on content marketing. I can tell you firsthand at whenIwork.com, that is our bread and butter. We have 500,000 monthly visitors to our blog, and that's our go-to strategy for connecting with people. But ultimately, you want to create a plan, whether it's simply, I'm going to go tell 50 people, or I'm going to go email my list of customers, or, you know, I'm going to go do something. I'm going to post it on Facebook. So the second part I think is important is not just to create content. It's to actually tell a story. It's to connect with customers. So think about this. You're publishing helpful tips for small businesses. Instead of just saying, here's the tips, you're going to learn a lot. Talk about, introduce the story, introduce the pain points, kind of wrap your brand around that content and add the why you're doing it. And that, I think, resonates with so many more people. And it resonates more on an emotional level, that they will prompt them to share it, or kind of help get the word out, and also just connect with the reader a lot further.
Sujan, you've in entrepreneur.com, your article talks about your seven steps to mastering content promotion in 2016. And one of them is one that is really, I think, important, but also it's one of my biggest pet peeves when I'm looking at content online. And that is when you find a link on Twitter or Facebook, you follow it, and you go to a paywall, and you say you give away your best content for free.
Yeah, it's something that I firmly believe in. It's give it all away for free. I think information should be free, and not necessarily. I'm not saying I don't believe in money. I love, you know, that's not what I'm saying. I think that if you give away your information for free, if you give away your best stuff, you've earned the trust of your audience. You've earned something that not many people have. People are going to come to you thinking, well, what else does this person have if he's giving all this great information for free? Like I said, with whenIwork.com, we give all of our content away for free. We have tons of ebooks. We actually, our CEO wrote a book and gave it away for free to all of our customers. You would think, hey, well, I want to make money. But that's why that's what causes customers to fall in love with the brand and earn that trust that otherwise would be very, very difficult, if not extremely costly to learn. And that means whatever you're selling, if it's a product, if it's a service, what have you, that is going to be much more susceptible to purchase. And if you think about it as, would you rather sell your content? That's not your main business model. Or would you rather sell, you know, your software? And or if your e-commerce site, whatever your business model is. And most people are going to say, I'd rather sell my core business model.
We're having a conversation with Sujan Patel, the Vice President of Marketing at When I Work on Twitter. He is at Sujan Patel, Sujanpatl on Twitter. We're going to continue our conversation in our next segment on this and go over some more of his tips for the new year on content promotion. But right now, let's check the roadways this morning with Mary Vandeville.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. It's 5:49. We're having a conversation this morning with Sujan Patel. He's the Vice President of Marketing at When I Work, and he's written an article in entrepreneur.com about marketing content promotion. Sujan, we talked earlier about the crafting a good story, crafting a plan, a promotion plan. We also talked about not giving away your content for free. And something you said about getting out there and putting it before people. You're not talking about going out and standing on the corner with like a cardboard sign, are you? I mean, what it will be a concrete way of going out there? Is it meeting people, going to you know, after work get-togethers? What would you suggest?
That's a great question. It's definitely not on the street. What I'm suggesting is actually figure out where your audience is hanging out. Figure out the type of audience, and you'll know what platform. When I mean platform, I'm thinking Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, are they on Entrepreneur? Are they reading that? Maybe getting in front of them through that avenue is a better approach. So it's finding out where your audience is and being active, most active on that channel. So if you're talking to consumers or small businesses, typically Facebook is better. If you're talking to, if your customer base or your audience is enterprise, you need to go on LinkedIn. Twitter is kind of a bit of both. You can tackle it, but ultimately you need to be where your audience is and emphasize those quote unquote channels more.
And that's the hard part about this, is because your audience could be across all of those channels and maybe even some others. Are there others that are up and coming that we should be aware of? Other social media channels where we could be promoting our stuff?
Yeah, definitely. So Instagram has kind of crossed the maturity line, is as large as Facebook or as impactful as Facebook and Twitter. The other two are Pinterest and Snapchat. You'd be surprised how effective Snapchat is for promoting content and just, again, getting in front of your audience. And more than just promoting content, it's really getting in front of your audience. And then when you making sure you're in front of the audience proactively, and then when you have a content piece to promote, you then blast it on that channel. And kind of think of it that way instead of going out there when you have the content to promote. So that's why you want to upfront put that strategy together to make sure you have that plan.
So we've followed all of your advice. Let's say we go through all of your list of things. We got to measure this somehow, don't we? I mean, how do we do that? How do we measure whether what we're doing is having an impact and is successful?
Ultimately, you want to measure, and you can measure based off the number of visitors that come to your site and by traffic source, but ultimately how many people are coming back to your site. And you can measure how effective each piece is by comparing it to the other pieces of content. And at the end of the day, month over month, your content and your site should be increasing in traffic. But more than just visitors, you also want to measure the engagement. How many people are commenting? Are they staying for a while? Like, what's the time on site? Another very important metric. And then also, what's their share ratio? And how much of your visitors are actually sharing your content? Those are very, very important things to essentially measure on a month-to-month basis. If you're doing it correctly, your old content should never be, it should be evergreen. It should be something that's consistently building. And the last thing is really looking at how much traffic are you getting from Google or any of the other search engines? Because if you're doing content marketing correctly, you should be essentially building a pool, an ongoing increasing pool of traffic from these search engines.
What is do you think the biggest mistake that we can make here? The biggest a pothole we could step into?
Yeah, great question. So I think the biggest mistake is talking about what you want to talk about and not what your customers or your audience wants to read. There's too many companies that say, I'm this software, I'm this company, and I'm going to talk about this because that's what I believe. I think what you should do is back up and think about, what are my customers or what's my audience's pain point? What are they interested in reading about? And really working your way to that kind of content and creating something that helps them. With content marketing, it's not about you, it's about your audience. And solving for that is ultimately what's going to get you the best results.
Sujan Patel is the Vice President of Marketing at When I Work, at When I Work, and WhenIWork.com, and has written on Entrepreneur.com. We'll link you to his story later today. He's at Sujan Patel on Twitter. Sujan, thank you for being with us on the opening bell this morning.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It's 5:55. Remember, you can join us March 10th at the Economist Innovation Forum 2016. It's going to be held at Four Seasons Hotel. The editors of the Economist, Fortune 500 CEOs and policy makers will be there. We'll envision the company of the future, what to do, what companies need to achieve transformation in order to flourish. Some other topics are going to include creating power partnerships, managing the modern workforce. And we'll have a question and answer session as well. Like, for instance, what can established companies learn from disruptive newcomers? That's going to be at the March 10th Economist Innovation Forum 2016. It's going to be at the Four Seasons Hotel with editors of the Economist, Fortune 500 companies, and policymakers. And you can save 15% off the current registration rate using the promotional code WGN15. That's the opening bell for today. Our producer is Mary Sandberg. Our engineer is Ben Cortez with production help from Ross Cochran and Kevin Powell. Market futures are lower, indicating a lower open on Wall Street today. All of the Asian markets are lower. Apple reports earnings today. See you tomorrow on the opening bell. Steve Cochran is next.